Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. The Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, is doing something important all of us throughout the world need to know about. The Land Institute is a science-based research organization that promotes an alternative to current destructive agricultural practices. They use a method known as natural systems agriculture, and we're going to find out about why that matters throughout this entire planet we call Earth. Today, I have in the studio Randy Matthews. Randy lives in Salina, Kansas. He is with the Land Institute. He works with development and annual gift giving. Hi, Randy. I'm so happy you're here today.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be here, and we're really enjoying our time in beautiful Astoria.
Is this your first time in Astoria?
I believe it is. I have been in Oregon previously, but I don't recall coming to Astoria, and I have clearly been missing out.
Yes, it is. It is stunningly beautiful. Although the prairies of Kansas have a magic, and you have fireflies there at night.
We do have fireflies, and there is a level of tranquility and serenity out on the prairie that is hard to emulate.
Indeed. Randy, before we start talking about the Land Institute itself, please tell us about your background.
Well, I am a native Kansan. I was not born in Kansas, but I have lived in Kansas virtually my entire life, including most of my life in Salina. The Land Institute is located just outside Salina. My background has been in arts administration primarily. I have worked with nonprofit organizations in the restoration and reopening of historic movie theaters throughout our state, and there are some gorgeous theaters that date from the 20s and 30s, and that work has been very, very rewarding. But I've always been aware of the Land Institute, have followed its work, and the opportunity arose about a year ago to come out to the land, bring my relevant experience in fundraising as part of my new duties, and I couldn't be more happy. It's the first time I've worked for a science-based organization, so I have had a learning curve, but I am getting up to speed fairly quickly. I'm working with a great group of people, and it's exciting to get up and go to work every day.
And what is the population of Salina, Kansas?
We hover just under about 50,000 people. We're one of the three or four largest cities in Kansas, amazingly enough, at that population. It's a great community, and there's a lot going on there. We're right at the intersection of two interstate highways, so it's easily accessible, and that helps in terms of events and seminars and things that the Land Institute hosts, where we bring in international speakers and collaborators.
Where do people fly? I mean, what airport is closest?
Well, there is an airport in Salina. It's a small municipal airport. The closest international airport would be in Wichita. A lot of people fly in there, but more flights originate out of Kansas City. And that's, in fact, where I flew out of to come up here to Oregon.
Okay. Well, the Land Institute, for those listeners who aren't familiar with it, let's talk about the history of it, when it was founded, who founded it, and why it exists.
Well, the Land Institute is celebrating its 40th anniversary. So it was founded in 1976 by Wes Jackson, who has been at its helm for the duration. Wes has been the spokesperson, the inspiration. He is a very charismatic, passionate individual. He's one of the most intelligent people I've ever met in my entire life. And he has directed this program for the entirety of that period. He left a tenured position at the University of California, Sacramento, to return back to his native Kansas and begin this institute in 1976, initially as a way to just develop a variety of research programs and explore possibilities for environmental causes, and eventually this coalesced into this focus on sustainable agriculture and specifically perennial grains.
And it's a 501c3, a nonprofit organization.
It is. Yes. And unique in the aspect that we receive no funding from any federal or state agency aside from competitive grants. the vast majority of our funding support comes from families, individuals, family foundations, and some corporations who are believers in the work that we do.
And we'll talk about what the work that you do. I want to also direct people to your website because I think it's terrific. There's a library with there are articles you can read. There's so much information there. And that is landinstitute.org. And on one of the pages I went to, it said there was, it talked about issues, and it said agriculture is eroding much more than soil. It's accelerating climate change and fouling waterways. It's the single human activity most responsible for dismantling the biodiversity that makes life as we know it possible. That's powerful. That's a powerful statement.
That is, and it's sobering to realize that that's the case. You know, traditional agriculture has accomplished a great deal over the years in terms of crop yields and things like that, but at a tremendous cost to the environment. The combination of tilling the soil, which causes erosion and soil degradation and runoff, together with these toxic inputs, the herbicides and pesticides, fertilizers, and massive amounts of irrigation that are draining aquifers, all of those have combined to really cause extensive environmental damage and contribute to climate change. And so it's clearly the case that regardless of what you view as the solution to that problem, most people recognize that the status quo cannot be sustained much longer.
Yes, and that's the other thing. It said the current agricultural paradigm takes a short-term high-yield approach dependent on heavy chemical applications and petroleum consumption. And well, that leads to the soil erosion and degradation. And so when Wes Jackson formed the Land Institute, and it began to coalesce, as you said, in 1976. He looked to the native prairie ecosystem. Why did he look to the native prairie ecosystem?
You know, I don't know that it was a calculated approach as much as it was a moment of clarity. He describes it as an epiphany that he had when he was visiting the Kansa Prairie, which is a large area of unmolested native prairie in Kansas with some of his students. And the story goes that as he looked around him at these sweeping vistas, predominantly encompassed with perennial grains and grasses in these tremendously complex mixtures, it occurred to him, this is how nature sustains itself and has for millennia, and is able to survive horrific droughts and pestilence and fire. And why are we, as human beings, so determined to do agriculture in a different way when it's a more of a battle than it is working in harmony with what is already there? And that's when it occurred to him that we needed to be mimicking nature to the best of our ability in our efforts to feed ourselves. And from that grew this focus on perennialization of grains in polycultures or mixtures so that it is a variety of grasses and grains that work cooperatively to be self-sufficient.
So what essentially all of nature's ecosystems are perennial polycultures, not the monocultures that we have now in agriculture.
That's fair to say. And that's because a monoculture, whatever its form, has a season to accomplish what it is intended to do. And so it has very little time to produce a root system. It's putting all of its energy into growth, into spreading out those leaves and creating those seeds and then dropping those seeds as quickly as possible and then dying off before, you know, winter comes or whatever the challenge is that it's facing. And so every year this cycle is repeated. You know, we plant, we grow, we harvest, and in the meantime, we're weeding and weeding and weeding and all of that energy to produce one crop, and then we start all over again. And it's a very labor-intensive system, and it's very, very detrimental to the soil and the environment.
And soil is so crucial. I mean, soil is life. We can't, without soil, we can't grow food. We can't live without food. And I also like the question that's asked on the website too, which is, you know, have you ever wondered why prairies thrive without any human intervention? No pesticides, no fertilizer, no irrigation, and yet they come back year after year, come drought or flood. The soil remains healthy, full of nutrients, and swarming with organisms.
Isn't that great? Yes, it's and you look at it from a distance and you say, as a layperson, well, that appears to be a grassland. But as you look more closely, you realize there are dozens, if not hundreds, of individual species of organisms, both plant life and microbes and insects and mammals, that are all interacting and are all key components to this ecosystem. And as you take a step back, you realize that we as humans are a part of that ecosystem. And if I could just offer this observation, there has always been sort of this attitude among humans that we are intended to conquer nature, to bend nature to our will. And it's characterized as a battle, and we're fighting and fighting and fighting, when if we were just focused on working more cooperatively with nature, it would be so much more harmonious and less stressful. And so that's part of the philosophy of what we're doing.
So you're actually growing grains there. I mean, I guess, first of all, you have an actual research station, you have a building, you have offices. How many people actually work for the Land Institute?
We have a staff of nearly 30, which would include our researchers, our technicians, our graduate students. We have regular organizational administrative staff, as you would with any nonprofit organization, our development team. But then, because we are a functioning farm, a research-based farm, but we are a farm nonetheless with a lot of ground that is being utilized with these test plots, we have, you know, the same kind of staffing that you would on a farm, with tractor drivers and mechanics and repairmen and on all of those kinds of folks. So it's a fairly complex organization that requires all of those components to function.
And so over the years, the Land Institute has evolved into a farm which is growing perennial grains that grow in these mixtures, and they share this complexity and all that. But so you have a particular signature grain though, right? I mean, is there, like, where are you in terms of growing food?
Good question. This has been a process, and it takes some time to get to the point where you start to see significant, tangible progress on any given front. We, over the years, have focused in on four specific grains. We have an annual wheat that we're working to try to perennialize. We have a domestic intermediate wheat grass that is indigenous to Kansas, and also in the more temperate climates, it thrives in areas like Minnesota where it's cooler, that we have trademarked as Kernza. And that wheatgrass, we are crossing with the annual wheat to try to help and introduce some perenniality into the annual wheat, but we're also domesticating the wheatgrass to try to make it viable in and of itself. We also are working with sorghum, and we're working with a sunflower, an oilseed. But you mentioned the one that we've started to achieve significant success with, and that is the Kernza, this intermediate wheatgrass. And we are finding that while we are continuing to improve upon that grain, and hopefully at some point it will become commercially viable for farmers, in the meantime, we've developed some niche markets where it is already being put into products, bakeries and microbreweries and distilleries and things like that are already utilizing Kernza in their products.
So Kernza, how do you spell that?
It is K-E-R-N-Z-A.
Kernza.
Uh-huh. Okay. It is what I've been told is that it was an inspiration to the scientists that is a combination of Kansas and the Kanza Prairie. And so they came up with Kernza.
Okay. And does it look like wheat when it's growing? Is it like a tall kind of golden crop? Is it green? What does it look like when it's growing?
It is green as it's growing. It is grass. And in its native form, it looks like a grass. But in the form that we are utilizing, as we cross it more and more, and with increasing numbers of generations where we replant the ones with the best seeds and then harvest those and replant and harvest, it's beginning to resemble more a traditional annual wheat. The seed size is the most critical piece, and so that's what we are working to improve. It is not nearly as large as an annual wheat is, but it is getting there. And so it can be milled, and it does produce excellent flour for things like cookies and scones and muffins and pancakes, but it does not work well as bread flour because it is very low in gluten, which actually has a health benefit for people who are concerned about gluten.
So true.
But in terms of a commercial crop, we need to continue to work with it so that it can eventually become viable in and of itself.
Well, it's very exciting. And if you've just tuned in, you are listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. Today, we are speaking with Randy Matthews. Randy lives in Salina, Kansas. He works with the Land Institute, which is changing the way the world grows its food based on the polycultures of the prairies, which are this mixture of grasses and foods. And anyway, we're going to learn more about that, and we're going to learn some exciting things about what's happening with Kernza. The Land Institute is a nonprofit, 501c3. I really highly encourage you to go to their website because it's so informative and so interesting. It's landinstitute.org. And you can become a friend of the Land Institute. You can look at their events. They have their Prairie Festival coming up. We'll talk about that. And there's a very exciting thing happening right now, Randy, with Kernza and Patagonia.
That's right. We are in the midst of a tour of a film called Unbroken Ground, which is a film that was created by Chris Malloy in cooperation with Patagonia Provisions. And it is a film that discusses food choices and how they are deeply connected to climate change, how food will play a critical role in the next frontier of our efforts to solve the environmental crisis. This is about a 35-minute film, and the Land Institute, and specifically Wes Jackson, is featured in this film. And it's being shown in conjunction with the release of a new product that is a Kernza-based wheat beer. And the initial release is in the Pacific Northwest. We are told there will be 680,000 12-ounce cans of this wheat-based beer that has Kernza in it, and every one of those cans will have the Land Institute's logo and web address stamped on it. So we anticipate that this will help draw a whole new demographic of folks to the Land Institute that have heretofore been unaware of us or what we do.
So, in other words, I could go to Patagonia, perhaps their store in Portland, and I could maybe buy beer there. As you said, Kernza has very little gluten, so it's kind of, there you go. There's a beer for those people who are watching their gluten. That's exciting.
That is exciting, and I don't know for sure how their distribution is structured, how soon they will have this product out available at the retail level. Currently, it's being introduced through these special events and these film screenings and things. But I would anticipate that very, very soon it will be available as a choice in microbreweries, in sports bars and things like that. So it'll be out there soon.
Sustainability. Kernza certainly would fit that. What is happening on the farm right now? You're preparing for a transition in leadership with Wes Jackson, and you've got a Prairie Festival coming up. Let's talk about events happening and about what's going on with Wes Jackson.
Great. Thank you. It's an exciting time. I just joined the staff not yet a year ago, and I came in at a time when there is a tremendous amount of transition. Very exciting change, but change nonetheless. As you mentioned, Wes Jackson, our founder, who has served as our president for 40 years, turned 80 in June and decided that that was an appropriate time to step down as our president. He will continue to serve as president emeritus. He will be active in the association. He has helped in the selection of his successor, who I want to also mention. And he will continue to speak and travel, but he also wants to do more writing. And that is a skill of his that people who are familiar with Wes Jackson are devotees of his writing, and I think it's going to be exciting to see what he comes up with. I know he has a lot of ideas floating around in his head and just hasn't had time to get them on paper.
I know I have heard that he is a larger-than-life character.
He is very charismatic. He is passionate about his work. He's one of the brightest people I've ever met. But he's very engaging. He's down to earth. He's jovial. He speaks frankly, you know, and he's a strong advocate. And so he's been a tremendous leader and an inspiration to everyone who has had the opportunity to work with him over the years.
And when is he stepping down, and when is the new president of the Land Institute going to take over? And tell us about him.
Yes. Wes's last official day as president will be September 30th. He will speak one last time at our Prairie Festival, which you mentioned, and he will introduce our new president, Fred Utzi. And it's I-U-T-Z-I. And Fred will assume the reins October 1st. And Fred has deep ties to the Land Institute. He was formerly a part of our fellows program. He attended 7 of our fellows workshops. His career has focused on farm research and rural development. He comes to us from the Illinois Institute for Rural Affairs at Western Illinois University. And he has a master's degree in sustainable agriculture and agronomy from Iowa State. So his background and his experience is very, very well suited to the Land Institute, and we're really looking forward to having him on board.
Well, how many acres does the Land Institute actually farming right now or own or have?
We have quite a bit of land there at the Salina campus, and it's a combination of land that was a part of the original Land Institute and other tracts and parcels that have either been donated or that we've purchased. In total, we have over 800 acres, but that includes some land in other areas of Kansas as well. We've got some land near the Konza Prairie in Pottawatomie County, and we also have a new parcel outside Lawrence where Kansas University is that is a separate research program that we are collaborating with. The Malone Family Foundation is funding that project, and we are working with the agricultural program at Kansas University to help staff that effort. But it's a very, very sweeping campus, and that's partly because we have a variety of different fields that we have test plots in various stages of planting, harvesting, and replanting at all times. So,
and people come from all over the world to this campus. And is the campus and the Land Institute campus is open to the public for tours and things?
It is. We do provide tours. We wouldn't characterize ourselves as a traditional sort of tourist destination. We are, in fact, a research institute, but we are happy to receive guests. If they give us a little heads up that they're coming, we can make sure that we have someone available from our staff to take them around. But we do accept tours even on an impromptu basis. It's a fascinating place to walk through and look at.
But the Prairie Festival coming up in September, it's September 23rd to September 25th of 2016. It's an annual event. And tell us about the Prairie Festival, because I looked at that online and I thought, oh, I would love to go to that. It's like there's a barn dance. Tell us about the Prairie Festival.
It's a really unique event. For 362 days out of the year, we are a research institute. And then for 3 days, we host this massive, amazing festival. And it's a unique kind of event because the focal point is this rustic barn in which these incredible speakers come from all over the world to talk about not just sustainable agriculture, but various environmental causes, social justice, any number of topics. These are prestigious, well-known authors, writers, academics. And those presentations are the focal point, and yet there are a variety of other activities. As you mentioned, we have dancing, we have locally sourced food that we serve. We have the scientists provide plot tours. You can go out into the test plots and see the work. yoga. We have field, you know, hikes and all kinds of things going on. It's just really, really, truly a festival atmosphere.
I want to go to that one of these days. I'm planning to go that. This year or next year, I will go to that. That sounds just amazing to me because, again, earth, soil, dirt, land, crops, we need to feed ourselves. And so how can we do this? And you're finding better ways to do it. I'd like to also briefly touch on the fact that you work with a lot of partners because, you know, everything is obviously connected. You work with the USDA and agricultural labs, and there are field stations in Minnesota, Georgia, China, Mali, and Australia. And so even though you're headquartered in Salina, your global partnerships really connect you to diverse climates and growing conditions, and that's exciting too.
That is exciting, and that's a trend that has really accelerated in the last few years. It's truly remarkable, the areas of the world that are touched by the Land Institute. We have collaborations actively and ongoing in so many areas. You mentioned some of them. And these are specifically tied to certain elements of our research. We have, you know, our Kernza is being grown out in Sweden and the Netherlands and in Australia. We have sorghum research underway in Mali and Uganda. The silphium projects we have underway in Uruguay and Argentina, in addition to all of the collaborations that are taking place within the United States. So it's really, really exciting to see that expand and grow.
I think Dorothy would think this is a Kansas that she might like to live in. I mean, this because really what you're doing is well, it's cutting edge. You're the only you have a unique mission, and no one else is really doing that in the United States, right?
It is unique. There are many, many entrepreneurs and visionaries throughout the United States and the world who are working feverishly to address these issues, and many, many strategies that are viable, that are perfectly appropriate, and that ultimately may be a key to providing a better future. We think what we do is critically important, and we are unique in terms of our work and our research, and we're very, very hopeful about the future.
Well, because the Land Institute developed Kernza, and so that is a crop that you developed. And then you're working on this natural systems agriculture. So we only have a couple of minutes left. This is such an incredibly interesting topic, but I wish we could go longer. But Randy, please tell the listening audience anything else we haven't talked about or anything you'd like them to know before the end of the program.
Well, I personally just find it inspiring that so many people from so many different backgrounds have come to the Land Institute and see in us the opportunity for a better way to do things. You know, everything from academics who are introducing our programs in their classrooms to young families who are interested in organic farming to traditional farmers and ranchers who have tilled the soil for generations but recognize that there is a better way to do this and are supportive of our work. And it's such an eclectic mix of very progressive, forward-thinking individuals, and they've all been drawn to the Land Institute. And I just think that's tremendous.
And you can find out more about the Land Institute at landinstitute.org. You can become a friend. You can find out about the Prairie Festival and make, buy a ticket and go back to Kansas. And you will find a very different Kansas than Dorothy lived in, I think. Thank you so much for being here today, Randy.
Thank you, Donna. I greatly appreciate the opportunity. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I've enjoyed visiting Astoria.
Well, I know that we have some great supporters of the Land Institute. Do we want to do a shout-out to Jan and John?
Jan and John Nibaki have been tremendous hosts, and I am not the first Land Institute staff member to come and visit your lovely community as their guests, and we are going to be seeing more friends of the land here yet today, and they have been just tremendous supporters of the Land Institute over the years, and I'm very grateful to them as well.
Well, thank you. The work you're doing is crucial for all of us throughout the world. Thank you so much, Randy. I want to express my gratitude to Graham for doing the engineering for this program today, and also my thanks to local banjo instructor and musician Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. It's so good for your body. And then and your mind and your spirit, and then focus on all the things that are going well in your life. So many things will go wrong, and we just need to focus on those things which are working in our lives, and then give yourself a loving and compassionate hug or a pat on the back for being uniquely you, for doing the best you can, and for being here now in this moment, the now moment, on the amazing planet we call Earth.